So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm reviews editor Charlene Lo.
And today it's all about the Surface Duo baby.
Oh,
Surface
yeah.
Duo. I've been waiting nearly a year to talk more about this and see more about it. So we've got a lot of details from Microsoft, and it's coming soon. You can pre-order it right now for $13.99.
Jeez.
So that's very exciting. Jeez, I know. Charlene's going to be talking about the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3.
Yes, it's
Which
a very, yes, it's the second Galaxy Watch proper, but it is named the Galaxy Watch 3. We'll get into that
yeah.
later on.
When you say Galaxy Watch 3, just add a question mark to the end of that, because it's like, somebody's still making Android smartwatches, huh?
Wow.
I don't
wow.
know.
Wow.
Wow. And we'll be talking about a couple other things. I've got some news from Intel, some of the new details on their Tiger Lake chips and their overall architecture. A lot of fun topics this week. If you've been enjoying the show, please subscribe to the Engadget podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. Please leave us a review on iTunes. You can drop us a note at podcast@engadget.com. We're also recording our episodes live. You could join us Thursdays around 10 a.m. on YouTube. You can see some behind-the-scenes action.
Get
and
to chat
also
with us
drop some
during.
Questions for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Surface Duo is finally almost here. It's almost here. We know
so
when
close.
It's coming.
Yes.
Microsoft says, yeah, you can pre-order it now. It's going to be available on September 10th for $13.99, which honestly is a lot sooner than expected. They've been previously saying holiday 2020. So it's kind of rare for a device to drop earlier than we thought it would. I'm very excited. I wrote up the basic stuff that we saw from Microsoft. We saw some more hands-ons from them. We saw some software. It looks good and polished, and to me looks like the most interesting dual screen device I've seen so far. And Sherlyn, you had a really good take too about the software.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking Microsoft and Google seem like a pretty good partnership for dual screen
oh, yeah.
devices, right?
Oh yeah, I think it's very sexy that they've partnered up. But I want to be clear though, it's not like we've touched this thing. We haven't gotten
yeah.
hands-on time with it. We've seen very...
Well, I did.
Yeah.
I touched it
well, you did earlier.
Back in October, remember?
Yeah.
For like...
A year ago, almost.
2 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think that anyone outside of Microsoft and Google, it seems like, have really touched this in mm-hmm. the real world. So a lot of the questions, or a lot of what we've seen so far is like, you know, Pane, who's the chief product officer of Microsoft, demonstrating mm-hmm. it during a live stream and stuff like that.
Just lovingly showing it off, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really great event that Microsoft put on too, by the way.
Yeah.
Very like professional and clean. But yeah, I'm so stoked to see this thing.
It's out here in the real world. So one thing we learned is that Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is walking around using one. I don't know if it's his primary device, but he's been using it.
Yes.
Pano says that he's using the Kindle app alongside
right.
a note-taking app because
right.
he is that sort of nerd
yep.
that takes notes immediately as he's reading. So
I do that too.
Shout out to, like, that is some great nerdy representation. We've seen Hiroshi Lockheimer, pretty much head of Android over at Google.
Yep.
Is like was tweeting about it. He put up a photo of it next to some nice sushi.
Yep.
So
he made some yakiniku.
That was cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was
out there. It's out there. It's real. Let's go over to the specifics
yes.
of it, because we have more
details
now. So here's what we know so far. It has two 5.6 inch AMOLED screens that form an 8.1 inch display when they're folded open. So that's the, you know, overall size. Of course, there is a hinge right in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is like the big thing. That is the 360-degree hinge that lets you, you know, rotate the screen all the way around. You can only be looking at one screen to use it in phone mode. You can hold it together to use it in booklet mode. You can lay it flat like a tablet. You can use one screen to hold up, you know, the device as like a tent stand. So there's a lot of flexibility here. And if you've been paying attention to Engadget for the past decade, this probably looks familiar, because this reminds us a lot of these Microsoft Courier project, which was this cool booklet PC design from like 2011, 2010, that didn't go anywhere. It was canceled, but it was the idea of bringing PC computing into like a, you know, booklet form, something you could walk around with all day and not carry around a laptop. it seems like we're getting there with this, and certainly with the Surface Neo. That's the Windows-powered dual-screen device one. That Microsoft yeah. showed off. Yeah, the bigger one. That one is reportedly delayed until next year. Mm. So that's interesting and probably makes sense. This is the one Microsoft is launching now, and it's coming at an interesting time too, right? Because it's coming when we just saw the Galaxy Z Fold 2. That's the third generation folding device from Samsung. It almost seems like the Surface Duo is a little dated. How do you feel about it now, Sherlyn?
I think the Z Fold 2, in terms of appearance, looks a lot nicer. And it has more screens, right? Technically, it's the same number of screens. One that's an 8-inch in the inside that you fold, and one on the outside that takes up the whole front of the exterior side panel, and it's like 6.1 or 2 inches. And it's got like a much better camera setup than the Duo, which we're going to get into a little bit.
Yeah,
but the Duo, I will say again, is a first-gen device. And if you've listened to this show, you'll hear me and Devendra tell you this, never buy a first-gen thing, because...
I do normally say that. I will also say I'm very tempted to pre-order this device.
I am tempted myself to check out, like, to get this and buy it for myself, but I haven't thought of like what use case would justify it just yet, so we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Sometimes you want to live on the edge, sometimes you want to live on the wild side and get a folding computer from Microsoft that will probably lose support in a couple of years because that's how Microsoft rolls.
And if you want to, if you want to support the Microsoft graveyard of dead products, go for it. And if that's, you know, if you have the money and the patience for that, do it. But again, this is a first-gen
I bought one of the Microsoft Kin phones, the like weird danger phones that they made right before Windows Phone launched. So I bought it for like $30 just to have this weird product in my hands. But you know, I collect all sorts of weird gadgets from Microsoft. Let's go into some specs here, too, because this is the new stuff we know.
Yeah, there's more specs, too, yeah.
Yeah, it's running, the Surface Duo is running a Snapdragon 855 processor, so not this year's 865.
Yeah, or the not even like very, Plus.
Right, certainly not that. So they were clearly working on this since last year, or at least 2 years, because they probably had access to that for a while. It has 6 gigabytes of RAM. It starts with 128 gigabytes of storage, which... I kind of
don't know if that's enough. Yeah,
at $13.99. So yeah, if you want 256, you have to pay an extra $100, $1,500 for that device. And to me, I feel like that's a better starting point for a phone like this, where you're probably going to have a ton of content. You're probably going to be treating it more like a PC. Interesting thing is, in terms of cameras, just one 11 megapixel camera, and that is the little circle you see above the screen. In the screenshots and like videos out there, to use it as a rear camera, you're basically meant to fold the screen around and use it in phone mode. I am not sure how this is going to work out.
Yeah.
This is totally against the way cameras are going now in smartphones. It is, seems like a compromise to me.
This is a selfie camera that you're going to use for portrait, for landscape shots as well, that sort of thing, right? Most selfie cameras are like 8MP, 10MP right now, so 11MP isn't that bad. But I will say this is why we caution against first-gen products, because you know if there's going to be a Duo 2, that it'll have a better camera. But for now, 11MP.
And who knows? Like, I haven't seen it in action. It could be a rear sensor that they're using in the front, in which case you'll actually have better, you know, selfie video and video conferencing than a typical smartphone.
We would need a bit more specs. I mean, I would say like a lot of, like, even the Note 20 Ultra, the Note 20 Ultra uses a 108MP sensor, but some of the like secondary supporting cameras are like 12 megapixels. Pixel 4 also 12 megapixels. Uh-huh.
We also, like you were saying, it's the thinnest Surface device. Mm-hmm. When it's opened up, it's 4.8 millimeters thin. It's using a battery that's spread across both sides of the device. It's only around like 3,500 milliamps. So like not that big.
Yeah, especially for two screens.
Microsoft claims all day battery life. It just looks good. It feels good. It weighs a little more than a half pound. So slightly heavier than the iPhone 11 Pro Max, the biggest iPhone, you know, so... Makes sense because there's Gorilla Glass in the back. It's all glass on the front. You've got more metal going on here. This device is definitely a choice. You know, it's a choice like when somebody buys a Note. It's like, I want a big phone for, you know, to scribble on and do all sorts of stuff. Oh, yeah. And
speaking
it supports
of scribbling,
the, scribbling. It supports the Surface Pen.
Yes.
Any of the Surface Pen devices. But this is where I think things get a little troubling. I'm worried about the camera. I'm also worried about the stylus support because there's nowhere to put Surface Pen
right
now. We know the Neo has like a little nook in it for to kind of hide the pen away. This one does not. So you'll have to walk around with the pen. You'll have to buy it separately. The support looks good, but it doesn't look like that's something regular people are going to be using.
Yeah, it might roll away from you. I will say, though, that I think that during our press briefing, one person asked a question of why you chose to go dual screen instead of folding screens. And Panos was saying that because we want to support pen. And it actually weirdly makes sense because, like, the type of screen technology you would need for a folding display might not be, you know, good enough to withstand, like, serious writing just yet. Like, we don't
know.
But poking with a pen nib isn't the best thing for a foldable screen right now. So that's part of the reason they went with a dual screen.
We'll talk about, like, the overall positioning of, like, this two screens versus a single folding screen.
Yep.
Last year, last October, right after the event, I wrote that I think this is a better plan for a lot of, like, for Microsoft and for the industry. I'd rather have two screens. I don't care about the hinge. Like, it's more durable. It's fine. Yeah. There are a couple other things, though. What else is missing from the Surface Duo? Because I know you feel strongly about this.
Yeah. So I take a lot of input from Twitterland, and Twitterland is really upset that there is no NFC on this thing. So for the, and I know that to a lot of people that might not matter, but if you rely on your main, and if you're going to use a Duo as your main phone and you use it to make contactless payments a lot.
Payments is the big thing. Yeah.
It's huge. And again, for a phone that costs $1,400 to start. The other feature that a lot of people were complaining about is the lack of 5G, which I'm not that mad about, but a lot of people are upset. Yeah.
I mean, wait, this is what I was telling people, like, back when the first LTE phones come out, like, you know, be upset when you see how much 5G drains the battery.
Also that.
Like, and how badly it doesn't, you know, how it doesn't really work well on first generation devices. I'm totally fine without 5G. NFC would be very nice because I do use Apple Pay or whatever the Android, Google. You know, Android Pay.
Yes.
Yeah, Google Pay.
Yes.
I do use that going around, but I wonder what is the technical explanation there? Like, could Microsoft not fit the NFC transistor in because it's two different phones sandwiched together? I don't know.
Right. I wonder if they would have to position it very carefully and have it, like, because the way you use it in phone mode is the two back panels are squished together. Yeah. So you would have to put it right under the right display or the left display
That would probably be the issue, right?
Like, I suspect. But we don't know.
Like, we don't know. There's a lot we don't know. I can't even imagine, like, how the use case for that would be. Let's talk about broadly this versus folding phones. What do you think?
Hells yeah. So versus folding phones in general, I think the hinge, so they demonstrated what Instagram looks like on the Duo, and you scroll, like, when it takes up to full two screens and you're scrolling through, there's that little hinge break in the middle. And when it appears, like, in midway through a picture, that's very disruptive. But for the most part, it looks like they've tweaked the software to really make use of and understand the separation between the two screens. And when you so-called span, that's what they're calling it, when you stretch an app across two screens in so-called span mode, you know, it looks like Microsoft's first-party apps, anyway, are very clear of where that hinge is. So it doesn't look very weird where, like, half the app is laying, like, in the hinge so you can't access certain, like, buttons or whatever, right? It looks well thought out. And actually, the software is what I wrote about. I don't know. I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, but software is a very important part of why dual screen devices have not taken off, right? They've been around. They've, good Lord. I mean, people are already shouting out the LG V60 with the secondary screen cover. That's an obvious like recent comparison. There's also then, and that's a phone. There's also been the ZTE Axon M, which is fairly recent. And then if you go all the way back into smartphone history, there's the Kyocera Edge. And the Samsung Hennessy. We've been trying to do this for a while with Android phones, and it's never really succeeded. So I'm very curious to see what, you know, this collaboration between Microsoft and Android would look like. I think so far from what we've seen, it looks nice.
Software is the key. And here's the thing, too. Like, one reason I don't, like, go main on Android is that I am constantly disappointed by a lot of Android software and certainly by what a lot of third parties bring into Android. And this implementation looks good. It looks like, and Microsoft says that they've built some dual screen APIs that will be a part of the Android spec. So other companies can come in and use it. You don't have to make a Surface device to use this hardware or to use the software. It's very well thought out. And to me, it seems like it's replicating the idea of having two separate PC screens, to, you know, a dual monitor setup, which I've had for years. I've really grown used to that, and it really helps with multitasking. And that's the idea. It's like windowing. Pano said, I believe in windows. I believe in windowing, which, first of all, great quote, but also something you'd expect a Microsoft person to say. But that is the idea, like, where you can actually separate in your mind, okay, put Spotify on one side, put Google Maps on the other while I research places to eat or something. You can actually multitask in a way you cannot in any smartphone right now. And I think even in a folding phone, like, I don't like the way they juggle apps side by side. I don't think it's very seamless, but they're also so much more expensive to get that privilege of a folding phone.
I think there are benefits to folding phones. I think that ultimately the goal with folding phones isn't to make, like, you know, such fancy, like, formats happen. It's more like to fold down something that used to be big and make it, like, compact and smaller, I think. And I do think that dual screens have less chance of being broken the way a dual folding screen can. I will say, though, like, some of the software that was interesting that Microsoft introduced with the Duo, this idea of an app group where you tie two apps together. Like, for example, you want to go on a social media binge and you put you app group Instagram and Twitter. So whenever
just
you tap
like a shortcut
that button,
in your launcher.
To launch both of them at the same time, which, you know, I haven't really seen. I've tried out a lot of dual screen phones. I haven't seen this yet. But a lot of it is just refined takes on existing features that actually have already showed up on foldable phones as
Which
well.
Is, by the way, that is Apple's move. That is what Apple tends to do when it takes features from Android or other places. It refines them.
That's
interesting.
I prepared this line to say to you, Dev, during this show, because I like to come up with, like, funny things to surprise you. Well, I have a fake riddle for you. Oh, answer boy. This question. Why did Steve Ballmer say developers, developers, developers?
Because it's about the apps, 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 baby.
Damn, you're so close. I was going to say it's about the software, software, software. But yes, it's about apps, apps,
I feel
apps.
Like my version of
yours
this
is
better.
A bit better. Stop.
Come on. Because
you just
actually
did
during
Apple,
our call.
You just took my story. You just took my idea and you refined it.
During our call, Panos, like, somebody was like, why did you choose Android for this rather than Windows? And Panos was one word response, apps.
He just kept repeating it. All he said was apps.
And then that's all he said for the rest of the call. He just repeated apps.
He broke. No, he did go on to say mobile apps. And he did go on to say that having access to the Play Store is very important for a device like this. And in that article that I wrote about why this software gives me hope, I think it's smart of Microsoft to work with Android on this, because they need to position the Duo, you know, as something running Android so that they can reach a wider audience, rather than position it as like, these are like Microsoft apps and these are like, you can get OneNote, Excel,
or the
Word.
Surface phone people have been waiting for.
Because then you risk making this a business first product. Like, people would think of this as like an office productivity machine, when really it should be something you can use in the kitchen, at home, reading a book on your couch, that sort of thing.
And also, it's 4 or 5 years since Microsoft officially killed Windows Phone. I think one of the smartest things Satya Nadella did since joining up is basically, like, look at Windows Phone and be like, none of this is working. And, like, since he came on, like, slowly just, like, stopped a lot of that. And Microsoft has gone with a more broad strategy, bringing apps to Android, bringing apps to iOS. It doesn't matter where you use Windows app or Microsoft apps, because you're still part of the service. So to me, I feel like that is the smarter move for them. This is just like, this is their first phone. It is a phone.
Yes.
Even though
a
lot of people seem mad about that in the comments. It is a thing you buy with a SIM card.
With a SIM card,
that
it makes
can make
calls
on a mobile network. It's a phone. It's interesting for that reason.
Yeah, they really, and I think that that's what was smart too, is they made this very easy for developers. A lot of the new interface tweaks that they introduced, like having a link open up in a different window screen when it senses that screen is empty, those are going to be part of the
interface.
You're
reading like your text messages, or your email,
someone
sends
you a link,
won't replace what you're reading. It heads to the other thing.
Right. And only if that screen's empty. So and Panos did say, like, you don't have to do anything extra on the developer end to make use of these basic new features. And these are all built into the Android code base, he said. So this brings me hope for, like, other dual screens, right? Dell was working on a dual screen device. They showed us some prototypes.
Samsung's future dual screens will be helped by Microsoft's.
I was going to say, so Samsung's folding screens are also going to be able to use this folding dual folding screen devices like the Z Fold 2, since it's built into the Android code base, will be able to make use of these features. But they have to like work on figuring out how to understand when the screen is folded and when it's not.
I think a really cool thing too is if a developer wants to go that extra mile and create an app that is custom tuned for the Duo, they can do that. Like Amazon's Kindle app actually has like a booklet mode, and when you turn the page, you see the page fold in like it a really nice, simple way. It folds across. So that little effort also gives you a much better experience. I'm excited about this because honestly, I have not been excited about smartphones for a while. Like maybe not until 5G is really a big thing, but hardware-wise, spec-wise, they've been kind of boring lately, even as we pour in more cameras and everything. So this to me is a huge leap. Let's talk about the price, because I feel like that is the sticking point for a lot of people.
Yep.
$1,399 for a 128 gigabyte storage phone. Thoughts?
A lot of people were saying, it's pandemic time, why are you? And I get it, but to Davinder, you brought this up earlier too. You said that you know, this phone has been in the works for a year. People didn't think that a pandemic would be
happening for several years.
I mean, it's been announced a year ago, so we at least publicly know of it for a year now. So for that price, I'm surprised, because like if you consider that the Galaxy Fold was like $2,600-ish or $2,400, and then the Z Flip is $1,380, this is a bigger device than the Z Flip. And for it to come so close to the Z Flip in terms of price is like incredible. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's not a folding screen, and that in itself is an expensive component.
I think in context, it's a good price also because Apple started pushing the iPhone past $1,000, and then Samsung did it with their flagship phone. So like we're used to very big phones, you know, going well past $1,200 now.
Yeah.
You're getting more with there this compared to a lot of other premium devices.
Other people do have concerns that for that price, though, you're getting like years old technology. Like we said, like the Snapdragon 855 is an old processor, 6 gigs of RAM isn't the most for two screens. So there's a trade off there, but I think you, for that money, you're paying for what you get, right? Because like
you're paying for the form factor and everything.
You're mostly for the form factor. So, and that doesn't include the Surface Pen, does it?
Does not include the Surface Pen. That's going to be another $100 or so.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But I think as we come away with it, the price is big. You know, it's an expensive phone, but I'm also, you know, I'm doing the iPhone upgrade program. So I'm slowly paying off, you know, an iPhone 11 Pro right now too.
Right.
That's $1,200 basically. Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, the price isn't that different. The question is if it'll be worth it. I think it's cool enough, but I still see it as just an experiment.
It sounds like, and you mentioned the equipment installment plan that you were just talking about. This will be carrier supported, right? Like we can buy it in the US on...
It's in AT&T stores and on AT&T's site. So you can pre-order it there.
Okay.
Microsoft did say you can bring an unlocked phone because you can also buy it from the Microsoft store. You can bring it to T-Mobile, Verizon and AT&T as well. So it's not going to be, you know, sold in the other carrier stores, but it's pretty flexible.
Yeah. That's nice. I mean, it's a little bit more work,
but
it works if you really want to. And if you're really spending that money, you already like prepared to put in the work. It seems like.
My recommendation for this, by the way, is people, whenever you can buy an unlocked phone, it will, first of all, once we can actually leave where we're trapped, it is very nice to have a phone that can work in other countries. But also, you just have so much more flexibility, too. So, unlocked all the way. I think buying it from the Microsoft store would probably make the most sense for a lot of people. Do an installment
and
plan.
Plan if they offer it. There's a lot of other concerns, too, about this device, right? We were talking about the price. Some people pointed out that in a lot of the pictures, and some of my friends also noticed that when people are using the Duo, it seems like there's some kind of rugged case or some kind of plastic case around it. And people are concerned that this means the device is not durable. It can't take a beating. What do you think of?
No phone is durable. Like no phone can take a beating. I think what's interesting is we were looking at some photos and there's this weird like white case, like a bumper case around it. It seems like it comes in the box. So instead of being worried about like the case, the phone not being durable, which I want a case on every single device, I think it's more interesting that Microsoft actually maybe putting this in the box and includes it. We've seen some photos. Hiroshi Lockheimer's photo has the case, and it looks like it's like a bumper. It doesn't cover everything, but still, it looks good. It looks like it's not adding much thickness or, you know, not taking away from the style much. I want to get my hands on it. we will hopefully be getting some, you know, a unit to review soon. And Sherlyn has already called dibs.
Wow.
But yeah, Sherlyn has called dibs. But as
no,
soon
we
as she
work
is
together
it,
on this. Devendra, we made the decision together.
I will yap it. No, I remember Sherlyn calling dibs and just saying, it's mine.
Nope. Wow, you're a total liar. I have the receipts.
We are definitely going to be covering this. Like, there's going to be a review. There's going to be other ways of covering it, because I want to look at it from the perspective of, like, maybe a mini PC, maybe as a Surface device. So let us know, what are your thoughts? Podcastengadget.com. Let us know how you want us to look at these devices. What are your questions, and how do you think we should be covering it? Okay, enough dual screen devices, Trillin. Tell me about one screen that is strapped to your wrist.
Tiny 1.2 inch screen strapped to my wrist. This thing has been both the pain and the love of my life and the pain of my experience the last week or so. It's a Galaxy Watch 3. I've been working on my full review for the last week since I received it on Thursday or so. And a lot of people, you know, think, are like, the Apple Watch is the best watch for the iPhone users.
Sure.
But what about an Android watch, right? And a lot of people are disappointed in Wear OS. Wear OS is a very limited OS. And I will say that, like, Google seems to be working on that, and the acquisition of Fitbit could bring about some interesting things. But right now, the most powerful OS for an Android phone in terms of the smartwatch experience is Tizen. I mean, I can't say anything else. Everyone I've spoken to who covers wearables agrees with me on this. Tizen is the best Android Watch OS.
And
Tizen is Samsung's OS that runs
software
on the Galaxy Watch 3. So what's new about the Galaxy Watch 3? Some things like the ECG feature is very similar to what the Apple Watch Series 4 or 5 started. There are some new exercise features, some new health tracking features. So I wasn't able to test ECG because that's only just gotten FDA approval. They weren't able to roll it out yet. And, you know, it's only available elsewhere in Korea. Nowhere else really has it yet because they need regulatory approval. But I was able to get a software update that enables some of the features like blood oxygen tracking and VO2 max readings. So it was a struggle kind of to review this thing because I have to decide, like, what features are consumers going to get? Because these things are already on sale. So I need to test the feature or the watch as it is right now, as you're going to buy it right now, right? So,
Well, can you tell me, like, Sherlyn, what, as a watch, come on, it's something you wear in your wrist. It's supposed to feel good. I like the look of this thing from the top, like from far away. I think from the side, I had gotten, I think, the Galaxy Watch 2 for my wife a couple years ago. That was a chunky boy. This also looks very chunky.
It is.
From the side. Like, there's a big pod on your wrist. It is not like a sleek watch or anything.
It is chunkier than, say, the Apple Watch. It's chunkier than the Fitbit Versa, but it is smaller than the original Galaxy Watch, which let's again play that game.
I mean, that's progress for Samsung, but still, in the market, it is the chunky watch.
Yes, and I've made this point several times, but the Galaxy Watch 3 is a bad name because it's only the second Galaxy Watch and the fourth Galaxy Watch active, if you include the actives.
It's not the Galaxy Gear, which they
let's ignore those. The Gear S3, those, we forget that those existed. Samsung's made a lot of smartwatches, okay? But
they make
this
a
guy,
lot of crap, yeah.
This guy, the Galaxy and the Gear series, the ones with the spinning bezel, they've traditionally been a bit chunkier. They've been a bit more oversized. Mm-hmm. They have that so-called, you know, oversized aesthetic that people like. The spinning bezel is smaller and lighter than before, which I like. I was concerned because when our senior editor for mobile, Chris Velasco, did his hands-on, he noticed that the spinning bezel just didn't, like, clunk into place as definitively as before. So it's not like a big chunker, like, it's not a big gear wheel, but it still spins and it still clicks into place quite nicely, and I like it. I think it's easy to use still, and this remains, both Chris and I agree, this remains the best way to interact with a smartwatch still to date. It makes swizzing through widgets on the watch so easy. And, you know, when you're deciding between this and a Galaxy Watch Active, for example, the bezel is the biggest difference. And other features like the ECG that are coming are also some of the differences you would be paying that extra money for. Speaking of, this thing costs $400 to start. The LTE model is going to cost you more. That's the same price as the Apple Watch Series 5 right now, which sometimes goes on sale for less. But that's why I have to compare it with the Apple
Watch.
Is
there an always-on screen?
Yes. So you can turn that on, and it will obviously affect battery life. But so far, mm-hmm. I'm getting about consistently 2 days of battery life with, okay. like, general use plus workout tracking and, like, making calls on the watch, which is something you can do, by the way. The other new thing, I want to talk about two of, like, my specific review sure. testing experiences. One is the fall detection. Because, like the Apple Watch Series 4 or 5, Samsung introduced fall, like, Samsung's calling it trip detection. Yes, but it's actually falling, when you fall in. So, you know, I'm sure you can imagine, dear listener, this is fun to test, right? It basically involves me trying to fall over and over again. I mean, it feels so bad for the Apple Watch reviewers 2 years ago. And no, not once did I trip the sensor. First, you had to go into your settings to turn it on, send an SOS contact or a message when you fall. And then I was like, I laid out my yoga mat because I was like, I'm not going to fall on my floor. I just kept, you know, I did actually fall a couple of times because one of the workouts that I was trying to do was very, involve a lot of like twisting in midair. But it didn't trip it. So I think part of that reason it didn't trip the sensor is because I was falling too fake. Too deliberate with my falling, or I wasn't falling at great enough
practice
velocity.
Practice your stage falling, Trillin. Like, come on.
Yeah,
come
give me on. That
or
Oscar.
Just like throw yourself on your bed like a child. Just like
I know.
Do like a big slam. I'm very sorry we could not test this in person because, as I said last episode, it would be really fun to just trip Trillin for work.
I mean, it would have been fun if we weren't all stuck at home because that would, yeah, it would be a lot of fun. But you know, there's. Another new feature that we still can't test yet is blood pressure monitoring, and that's because mm-hmm. it's going to be available in Korea because they've got regulatory approval there. But right here, we don't have a timeline yet on whether or not the FDA is going to approve it. So I'm not going to be able to test it on my review unit just because it's also not going to be available for those people who buy it now today. Right.
Is this something you think people should buy? Like that's the thing. Like this watch, Android smartwatches in general, I feel like Google has been disappointing in this market, so it really is up to Samsung to kind of save it. They're trying, but they're basically just copying Apple at this
point.
Let's
not conflate the two. I think an Android smartwatch is a very different thing. When I think Android smartwatch, I think a smartwatch that Android phone users can use.
Well, I'm just talking about smartwatches for Android phones. This is only Android, right? You can't use this on
iOS. Well, you could, but you can use it with iOS. It's just like will be a lot, the functions will be a lot less integrated. I guess you can't reply
and
to
why
messages
would you?
Directly and stuff like that. Yeah, and also if you have the iPhone, you might as well get an Apple Watch for the same price. Now, in the land of watches for Android phones, there's a lot of options. You've got the Galaxy Watches. You've got the Galaxy Watch Active that Samsung also makes. Then you got to talk about the Fitbits of the world, which also can be used by iPhone. You can talk about the Garmin smartwatches. Then you got the Wear OS watches, which those are the ones that I think you are right to feel a little, you know, disappointed in, right? Because they just haven't done a lot to the OS to improve it. They've added some things here and there again, but they're not very comprehensive in terms of health tracking. They don't do a lot. I mean, they're good for like syncing with your phone because Google's good at that stuff, but that's pretty much it. Should someone buy this watch or any other smartwatch for an Android phone? I think some people like who really want to be able to leave their phone on their desk while they roam around their house or office, those people will benefit from something like that. People who are really into tracking their health and workouts will also benefit from a smartwatch or a fitness tracker like the Fitbits series. But the Wear OS watches, I'm finding a hard time trying to think of the person that would enjoy a Wear OS watch, right? I've used them and I've really liked them for a while, but that was like a year or two ago and now everyone else has progressed, right? That was Fitbit even does better sometimes than a Wear OS watch now. So I don't even, and you know, we know Google is in talks to buy Fitbit and I would love to see what comes out of that. But a Wear OS watch is not as great a buy as a Tizen or a Galaxy watch. So that's, I think, where I stand on this. It is kind of expensive, but this is also the Apple Watch equivalent, right? The Galaxy Watch 3 is the Apple Watch equivalent in the land of Android.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm an iPhone user and I have a Apple Watch Series 4 and I barely use that thing, especially now that we're trapped at home, right? If I go for a run, I'll pull it out, but it's not something I walk around with all day. So I do think for a lot of people, even like the tech heads like
me,
today
for sure,
just wait, we're still waiting for that dream James Bond watch. I think the Series 4 is cool. It is like sleeker. And, you know, then the
battery life, though, Apple Watch battery life is not good. Apple Watch battery life is just a day.
I would charge every day like everybody else. Series 5 seems cool. I am waiting for like a big smartwatch revolution, but I also can understand why a lot of these companies gave up, because this market is just kind of dead. Aside from the Apple Watch and Fitbit,
maybe
a few Garmin things. Like, people want these things for fitness, not really to have on all the time.
I've liked having it on all the time, because one thing the Galaxy Watch 3 has done that's impressed me so far is the idle reminders. Like, when you set still for like an hour, it'll remind you to have a move. Mm-hmm. But, and every watch does a version of this, but the Galaxy Watch goes a step further. It will suggest some stretching exercises, for example, and give you on-screen diagrams as to how to do them. So one of the things you can do is a torso twist. So it shows you, stretch your hands forward, twist around, whatever. As you do those actions, they'll be like, do 5 reps of this, right? As you do it, there's smart enough to track every single rep, and they've been very accurate every single time I've done this, and it's a lot of times because I sit still for a lot. But that's nice to have on my watch to just remind me to not let the hours go by and not do anything.
It's useful in our dystopian future where we do not have human contact with other people. It is helpful to have like something to say, hey, eat, hey, move, don't forget to breathe.
But you're right. Shower. You're right that in this environment, as we're all stuck at home, having a watch on our wrist is less important, and people shouldn't. If you're only thinking of buying a smartwatch now, maybe hold off till next year, because we're still going to be at home and you have your clock in front of you.
What about sleep tracking? That was something you had mentioned before. Yeah,
that's another thing that I hated testing, but I loved seeing the result off. I, as a person, do not enjoy wearing a watch to bed. I really hate it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And this thing we said is chunkier than most watches, and so I had the worst night's sleep of my life when I was trying to test this thing, sleep tracking. I swear to God.
Were you
was it
just the discomfort, or just like sleeping with something different, I guess?
Yeah, it's a mix of both. It wasn't so much the discomfort, it was more like my own personal like inability to like sleep with something strapped on my wrist. I felt like I was in handcuffs. But I will say, Samsung has updated the sleep tracking this time around to include heart rate info as well as accelerometer data to give you insight into what sleep zones you're entering. This is something Fitbit has done for a while, but Garmin and Apple don't seem to have a version. In fact, Apple's sleep tracking isn't even rolled out live. It's still in the watchOS 7 beta, and it's pretty basic. So now Samsung's got this, and I had the worst night's sleep of my life. I was drifting in and out of sleep. I didn't really get any restful sleep at all. And I was woken up at 6:30 a.m. by a delivery person at my door when I was finally getting some deep sleep after like waking up at 5:30 a.m. So anyhow, I was...
Perfect day. Perfect day.
Great night. I was very upset. But when I woke up in the morning, I was like, I bet the watch didn't even capture any of this. And I looked at the watch and it captured every single thing. Like, it showed that I only had...
Did it just say, hey girl, are you okay in the morning?
Yo, how you doing? I tried to work out after. They were like, are you sure you're feeling up to this? I was like, no.
Maybe you should just lay down.
But I will say the info was very good, right? On the watch face itself, I could see that I had done like 4 cycles, and 3 of them were above the deep sleep line. So I was only in light sleep and REM sleep. And then as, you know, it really corresponds to my experience. Around 5:30, I woke up and I saw the sun was about to rise. I tried to go back to sleep and finally had restful sleep. It showed that I was in deep sleep around that time before the delivery person woke me up. So it was surprisingly accurate to me.
It's something. It's something.
It's, yeah. I mean, if you're interested in tracking your sleep like that, this is really good data to have. But I don't know that a lot of people want something as in-depth as this. So it really depends.
I do. Let me just say, I feel like we've gone backwards a little. Like, I remember when, with the first round of fitness trackers and everything, when Fitbit had just came out, and Jawbone, a company I love, like, just their products are so, you know, interesting and weird, and they flow too close to the sun.
Yeah.
They could not survive because they were the company making all the Bluetooth speakers people wanted.
Yep.
Jawbone Up was my favorite fitness tracker just because of the way it felt. That had really great sleep tracking, and it was so thin and light and like easy to wear that I didn't really mind taking it to bed and getting that data.
There's a lot of devices out there that can do that too, right? Withings makes devices like that. We still got Jabra devices. But here's the thing. The challenge with making a smartwatch really good is because you have to make components so small they fit into a thing that's this size, like 44 millimeters, 41 millimeters, 1.2 inch screen. It's already so difficult to get a good battery in there. They can't really do much else with it. So that's a challenge.
Yeah.
And let's I mean, hopefully we'll see. The Galaxy Watch 3 has a lot of other improvements I can't get into at length because we don't want to do a 13-hour podcast. But the review is going to be live tomorrow, and which is today by the time the podcast listeners get this episode on Spotify and all our other podcast platforms. So go to the website to check out my in-depth thoughts. We'll have pictures, we'll have screenshots, we'll have videos. You can see this thing for yourself. It'll be great.
Let's move on to what we're working on and some other news happening this week. I wrote up a story that really broke my heart. The creators of Avatar, The Last Airbender, have left the Netflix live-action show. Sherlyn, I don't think you understand
what
this means.
I was laughing because I was like, wait, I think DaVinci's been working on another thing, Intel.
I've been working on a whole bunch of things, but yeah. Let's talk about this because this hits my heart more than Intel.
I know.
But yeah, damn it. Michael DiMartino and Brian Kunitzko, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but they created Avatar, one of the best shows ever made. It has been a huge hit on Netflix since it has been there. Mm-hmm. There was a live action movie, 2010? We will not talk about that.
That's the only thing I've seen in the Avatar
franchise.
Oh my
God. We will not talk about that ever again. I have a funny story about that too, because man, I met freaking M. Night Shyamalan the day after I saw that terrible movie, and he was a nice guy. Like, I remember, like, he was it iPhone 4 or something by that point? But he, like, grabbed it out of my hand, and he was just like, hey, this is really cool. Look at how far we've come tech-wise. So M. Night Shyamalan, he is a gadget guy.
Oh,
dang. He is a tech bro, but did not make a good Avatar movie. Anyway, I was really hoping that this would be a chance to bring this series into live action somehow. But according to Michael DiMartino, like, they just could not creatively, connect with whatever Netflix was doing, which, first of all, it makes me really sad. He gave a really great passive-aggressive knock at this.
Oh,
it's like, hey, it has the potential to be good. I don't know. But the fact that he's leaving and the other creators leaving, not a good sign. I'm worried. I'm rewatching The Legend of Korra right now, actually, for another podcast. And I love this universe so much. Avatar is so good. Just watch the show, Sherlyn. Like, it will help you survive the pandemic. This is very sad. So what are you working on? You have a lot of worse things to watch, but what are you working on?
I finally sort of peeking out of embargo land for a little bit, but there's more on the horizon that's coming. In this interim, I'm setting up interviews for a story on a topic that I have been trying to pursue lately. I don't want to give it away just yet exactly the specifics because I don't want to be scooped. You know, I always like have these great ideas for stories and then someone else does it and I can't do it anymore.
Listen, that's our lives.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
I am excited about this topic. It's something that's very important, I think. But I will say that the first week of September looks like it's going to be hellish and we're already in the middle of August. So kind of looking towards that, there's a lot of the prep work that comes with that coming up. We already know the Galaxy Z Fold 2 More Info Day is September 1st. We know the Surface Duo launches or arrives September 10th. And then we've also got Motos doing a new foldable phone.
Well, also, you're mentioning all these things. iPhone time. Like, that is
and it's iPhone time. Yeah.
We didn't talk about this during the Surface thing, but September 10th is a very key date because that is when last year's iPhone event was. So clearly Microsoft is just saying, hey, you're going to be excited. You want to be excited about a phone? Forget the iPhone. Check out this dual screen.
Hey, look who's not innovating in dual and foldable screens. I don't know. I think that's what they might be saying. But I mean, again, we will be
I would love like a passive aggressive like announcement. It's like, hey, hey, Apple, look at this. We'll see this in 5 years from you, right? You'll do this in five years and call it your own invention.
I also love that Google and Microsoft teamed up and Apple's probably not going to. I don't know. We'll see. But that's all coming up and lots of stuff in the interim. I always get news out of nowhere during the week. You all can see all of that on Engadget.com. Dev, you've been working hard too.
A bunch of things. I was up till 3 a.m. last night writing up this news about Intel's latest chip architecture.
Woo.
Baby. How do you feel about FinFET? Sherlyn.
Look, when they said it, FinFET. Very
transistor
interesting
technology.
Yes. Very sexy.
So this is it's kind of a wonky thing, but FinFET is the sort of like semi-3D design that Intel and a lot of other companies have been using over the past few years to create transistors that have like a little more room. They actually look like fins. If you like scale down microscopically, the way these things look is that they have these fins to create extra data channels, basically to make transistors faster, to help them be more efficient. They've optimized their process. So now they have something called SuperFin. SuperFin transistors. And this technology is going to be in their upcoming Tiger Lake chips. And it's a lot of wonky stuff, but the big takeaway is that Intel is saying it's Tiger Lake chips, which we are waiting for and are going to be headed to laptops later this year. They're going to be like faster, much, much faster than last year's chips. The super fintech, their refined, you know, was it 10 nanometer technology, their architecture, it's going to be a lot better. So it'll be faster at lower voltages, which is great. If you look at our story about SuperFin on the site, there's like a great graph of just like what Sunny Cove, the previous Intel core, kind of accomplished, and what Willow Cove, the new CPU core that's inside of Tiger Lake. So bear with me now. Willow Cove, the new core, Willow Cove has SuperFin transistors. It's going to be in the Tiger Lake chips. That is where we're headed. All of that is to say these chips are going to be really fast. They're going to have higher clock speeds at lower voltages, which is great for battery life. And at higher voltages, much higher clock speeds in general. So these chips...
good burst performance.
Good burst, but good like good all-around performance too. So these chips are going to be really fast. This is really interesting too because Intel just announced that they're delaying their 7-nanometer chips for a while, until at least 2022. So that was a big knock for Intel. AMD's already releasing 7-nanometer products. It does feel like Intel is behind, but at least in this respect, when it comes to clock speed and, you know, things that may matter more to gamers and performance enthusiasts, like, this is a good step for Intel. AMD currently has the lead on multi-threading, you know, using multiple cores well and efficiently.
Yeah.
But that's not... Actually, that doesn't really matter for a lot of gamers. What matters more is raw clock speed, because then you that matters for like your FPS and everything. So, hey, this is all interesting. We also got some new details on Intel's Xe graphics, and this is the discrete graphics technology Intel's working on that is their own, right? So it's basically them trying to bring the level of graphics AMD is already bringing into its laptops and desktops with the Radeon stuff. You know, AMD is very lucky in that it produces both processors, normal processors, and graphics, and can kind of tie those things together. That is a big advantage for them, you know, for a while now. So Intel is trying to, you know, lead on that. We know that the Xe graphics in Tiger Lake are going to be pretty fast. I saw this demoed back at CES in both an ultra-portable and like a chunkier mid-range laptop, and I was able to play some games in 1080p with low graphics. So that's pretty good for, you know, technically integrated graphics. It's dedicated graphics that is built into the chip. So similar to the Ryzen processors right now. But, you know, last year we were talking about Ice Lake and how Intel's integrated graphics have gotten a lot better. Now it's like even a bigger step forward. The other thing we learned is that the Xe graphics for gamers, the one that's going to be in an actual video card, is going to be arriving next year, according to Intel. It's going to have ray tracing. It's going to compete, hopefully, with what AMD and NVIDIA are currently producing. I don't know. I'm not holding my breath for that.
I'm like, good luck?
Good luck? This is a whole new category for you that you have not been in for a very long time.
Yeah, not good, like a lot of good experience on that.
There's a lot of drama behind this too, because Intel did bring over Raja Koduri as SVP.
Stolen
kind
from...
of lead Tiger Lake. Stolen from AMD. He was the guy who, I saw him at Computex like several years ago, but he was the guy who like released the, who designed the, I believe the RX 480. One of the good like mid-range AMD cards that really brought them back and helped them compete with graphics compared to whatever NVIDIA is doing now. So this is all wonky chip stuff, but basically Tiger Lake chips, I think, are going to be really interesting. I'm excited to see like how these things are actually done, how they're actually handled. And one more thing we're going to mention too, kind of related to all this. We did learn, we got some Xbox Series X news, and Microsoft announced, hey, it's coming in November. We don't have a clear ship date. It's coming in November. Okay. It has thousands of games that'll be playable on it. That seems like good news, right? No, it actually seems like they're deflecting the fact that Halo Infinity, is delayed until 2021. So delayed until next year. That was supposed to be a launch game, supposed to be like a very big first party title.
Yeah.
Not coming. That's going to be a big blow for Microsoft, and it's certainly going to
Will it prevent people from wanting to buy that console when it goes on sale, you think?
You know, that's the weird thing, because the case Microsoft has been making is basically, hey, you don't actually need to buy this new console. You'll be able to play all our games backward on Xbox One or PC or other things. And they're trying to sell an ecosystem more than a single console, but you still need like those key games to sell the hardware. So I think this is going to be disappointing. It may hurt them overall for this entire console generation. I'm still more excited for the Series X than the PlayStation 5, but hey, I will end up getting both because I'm that sort of nerd.
November.
So don't bring your console wars over here. I will have both.
November is interesting, in my opinion, timing-wise, because that's like really close to Black Friday. You think they'll do a launch and then do Black Friday sales or none or a bundle?
There will be no Black Friday. Like, the last few console launches were not that long ago. So I reviewed the Xbox One X and the PlayStation 4 Pro for Engadget. They both arrived around November.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there may be some stores doing some sort of bundles, but there are no discounts. Like this is...
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to discount the actual console price for sure.
We don't even know pricing for these devices yet. And given the hardware, like I am bracing myself for a $600 console, which is not something we've seen since the PlayStation 3. Yeah. And that was supposedly disastrous for Sony. We are hearing that Microsoft may talk about an Xbox Series S, like a slightly cheaper model, in the next few weeks. So who knows? But I wouldn't be surprised if the Series X was $600, maybe even $700. The amount of tech in there is hardcore.
Yeah, that's
true. But I'm hoping this stuff doesn't go too out of hand. I'm sure a lot of gamers want some new hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a PC gamer, then whatever. You just get the Microsoft stuff. Get Game Pass. Really, Microsoft Future Console is Game Pass because... you get everything for a monthly fee. You get new games. You get, like, you know, a lot of great services. So November, going to be a big one for Microsoft. Who knows when the PlayStation 5 comes out? I assume Sony, like, everyone's just waiting. This is a game of chicken. Everyone's like, oh, okay. They're saying November. Okay, we can say November. What's the price? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're waiting for each other. So good luck, everybody. This is a very exciting time. Hopefully, I think for gamers, there's a lot to look forward to. But, man... save up. It's going to be expensive, whatever it ends up being for either of these consoles. That's enough news. Let's get to some fun stuff. Sherlyn, what do you... First of all, I know you like to surprise me with things, but what is up with you?
All right. So when I'm... This week, these 2 weeks have been rough, and I have not had a lot of time to watch good stuff to like bring onto the show for recommendations, so... Pardon me.
That means you ever have time to watch good stuff.
Well,
but
I did watch a bunch of good stuff in the past few episodes. Yeah. Anyway, and I've been watching a lot of like stuff that ended up being bad, so I can't recommend it. For example, have you heard of The Discovery on Netflix, Def? I don't know if you've seen it. Yeah, is this Jason Segel, I think, Rooney Mara, and they're in this like world where it's some kind of sci-fi, but it wasn't like that great. There was a very
What is the premise? I remember this.
Yeah, the premise is that I forget the actor's name, but this scientist has discovered and has proven without a doubt the existence of another plane of existence.
Right.
So either a parallel universe or an afterlife. So people start killing themselves en masse. And because they think that there's a better place.
Really the thing we want to see today, yeah.
Yeah, really, totally. My timing couldn't be better. But anyway, they are at 4 million suicides in the world. Jason Segel meets this girl on a boat going to some island somewhere, and she tries to kill herself and tries to save her or something. That's sort of the general premise. But the science fiction premise of it is very interesting, but I don't feel like they really explored it very well. So
yeah, I saw this movie a couple years ago too. I wanted to love it because it's by Charlie McDowell, who he directed The One I Love, which was a really, really interesting like sci-fi premise drama romance from I think like 2014. That was a really cool concept. And I love that movie. Discovery didn't work out that much.
It just didn't work out that well. So that's not my recommendation. I have two
quick
shouts. One, I was like, I like to try and bring like timely things to this show so that I'm not picking up very stale old picks. So, but like,
leave your stale picks at home. Please.
I know this thing I'm trying to talk about has been around for years. People have known of this show, but it only recently wrapped. So I'm like, okay, perfect timing to bring it up. I just started watching, and this will be a surprise to you, Def, because I'm such a Marvel nerd. But I just started watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Are you kidding me?
I am kidding. I'm not kidding.
You pick like the time when it literally just ended.
Exactly.
First
to start
of all,
watching this.
I was shocked just seeing people still be talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. today. Because I remember when the show premiered and it was such a disappointing mess of a TV show. I hear it got better, but that first season, Say what you think, but that first season is a goddamn waste of time because they were basically like treading water until Civil War happened and like big twists happened in the Marvel Universe. So they like just couldn't do anything for 15 episodes. What do you think?
I'm having a hard time liking some of the characters. I mean, I think some of the characters are very likable. I like Ming-Na Wen. So Wen Ming-Na, her real name. She, I keep getting compared to her in terms of like physical appearance. I'm just like, all right, cool. I like that. But I should watch this show to get a better sense. And she kicks ass. So I think that's awesome.
And when the show started, she was still like, she's not exactly young. Like
She was 49 when the show started, yes.
And she was kicking ass in many ways. So I respect to the show for that. I love her so much. And
so
lead
much
of the show I like, yeah.
So I just started, and season one's a little choppy, but like you said, I heard it gets better. I mean, if you want a good Marvel, like I miss the Marvel universe, obviously, with like phase,
This is what it is. You are so desperate. You're like, Marvel. And you're just like scraping at the bottom of the barrel and you found Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, okay, enjoy.
Anyway, so yeah, but my real actual fresh recommendation, and I'm still not certain on this, is a Peacock show called Brave New World. Dev, have you started watching it?
I have not because word has not been good about the show.
The reviews haven't been good, but there's only really two episodes so far, so I'm trying to give it a chance. Now, for me, it's hard to really understand whether or not I like this show because it's so... I studied this book for school, right? It's so hard to extricate what you know from like the actual story that's unfolding in front of you on the show. But I like the visual interpretation. I do like it was nothing like I imagined in school. Like when I was studying this, I imagined very drab, like none of this like slick architecture that
they're showing. I imagine like the way the 1984 80s movie looked,
exactly,
which is very 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 stark
and almost prehistoric. Yeah,
is good. Yeah,
so the visual, I think the visual effects and everything and the look of it is really nice. The you know, there's good actors in it. I love Jessica Brown Findlay. I love Hannah John Common, and they're both from Black Mirror, and they're both in this show. So I was like, okay, I'll check it out for them. And they're both great in it. So if you really want to, you know, you can extricate like your memories of school time, you know, reading Brave New World, the book, and want to see it play out in a show, I think this is a good way to check it out. It's got good effects. It's got good graphics. So
it's also like we are living through the dystopian landscape that a lot of these books predicted. So it's
And I will say there's a bunch of like nudity and whatever. So if you're that's not your thing, just don't. But if
well,
it
now
is
you
your
just
thing,
sold me, Charlene,
I know you're gonna watch it.
There's
now.
There's nowhere else to find nudity on the internet.
What would you say I should watch, Dev?
A couple of things. You probably don't care about Halo, but I think there was one video that I saw last week that really cracked me up. And this was Brian Gilbert over at Polygon, he's a video producer there. He makes some funny things, but he basically created this 30-minute or so long video about reading every single Halo novel. And as somebody who has read like some of the earlier, like the first couple of Halo books, I was like, okay, this is cool. This is interesting.
Oh.
Because as a world, Halo has like a lot of like lore. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
The games don't always really tap into that. So I was like, okay, what is going on here? Just seeing him go insane, like it drove him insane, like learning all this Halo lore, not knowing where to put it.
Oh my God.
It is a fun video. It's a fun thing to watch somebody's just mind crumble in front of you. So, hey, to me, that's fun. Because I'm weird like that. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check it out. Isn't there like a Halo movie or something? Or a few Halo movies or something?
I mean, people are working on it, but...
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
that is a thing we've been waiting for a while.
Okay.
But it's not quite happening.
Oh.
The other thing I want to mention, talking about like, you know, timely picks that were depressing for the pandemic, is a movie called She Dies Tomorrow by Amy Simons. I wonder, Sherlyn, like, I wonder if you'd be into this.
I wonder.
Because it's a movie, it's a very low-budget kind of experimental sci-fi thing, but it's about a woman who gets this idea in her head that she is going to die tomorrow. Like, she's convinced of it.
Wow.
Nothing will, you know, take her away from it. So it's like somebody who's confronting her own mortality. But the idea, it's like a virus.
Mm-hmm.
So when she talks to somebody else or somebody like her sister comes to see if she's okay,
they get the same fear.
Wow. It's like an instant existential unlock of like, oh man, I am going to die tomorrow. And it's people, this story, like, you know, this thing happening to several people in a city, and seeing how they respond to it and how they react to it. I found it really interesting. I also just reviewed this movie over at the Slash Filmcast, so you could go check it out there. But it's really interesting. It's like, you know, kind of cerebral, experimental sci-fi. It's not for everybody, but I found a lot to be to find fascinating there because it's very low budget. Like, there's not... not like big special effects or anything, but it does a lot with the premise. And as somebody who, hey, I'm pretty anxious. Like, I've worked through anxiety in my life. Like, so this is like really confronting a lot of those things I've always feared. So to me, kind of terrifying. There are some sequences in this I think are truly memorable. She Dies Tomorrow. Check it out if you're into this sort of like weird sci-fi.
Where would I watch it?
You could rent it or buy it now on video on demand. So iTunes, wherever.
Play Movies, always shouting out that Play Movies.
Literally the only person buying anything on Play
Movies. I have a lot of Google credit from answering surveys that Google asks me to fill out, so I don't mind. No, it does look very interesting. It feels a little morbid, like you said. I am terrified of mortality as well, so I don't know if I'm going to necessarily watch that, but it could be something fun.
It is kind of the way we're all feeling right now, but between this and like Spring Breakers, it is really interesting to see, not Spring Breakers, Palm Springs. Yeah. It is really interesting to see people confronting their lives. But hey, by the way, Spring Breakers, another crazy good movie that nobody has seen. So, yeah.
And that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elton. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at the Slash Filmcast at slashfilm.com. Also, keep an eye on my Twitter. There may be something happening around Legend of Korra.
Ooh. Well, I don't have any surprises to leak on my Twitter, but if you want to tell me what Avengers content I should be digging into, you can hit me up at Sherlinlo on Twitter. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes because that would be really helpful, and... please subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. I see a question in Chinese that I can quickly answer. Why is this thing so expensive? 为什么卖这么贵?